Hey guys, welcome to episode 221 of the podcast with Kirsten. And boy, as you can see from the length of the podcast episode, it's long. That's because she's wonderful. This one went real deep and personal, real squishy, wonderful thoughts, much sincerity, some tearing up. I hope you enjoy it. I want to thank for your emails, Casey, Cody, and Sarai. I hope I said your name right, Sarai. And I also just want to thank everyone who has been so supportive and, might I add, patient with the massive amount of promotional output I've been doing on social media for Stand Against Evil. I think that's one of the ways that IFC reaches the most people, because it's not this kind of giant network with like huge bus ads in every city. So thank you so much for supporting and retweeting and, you know, horror comedy may not be your bag, but I still think there's so much inside the show to enjoy. I hope you'll give it a shot and give it some love. And that's it, other than that you should enjoy this episode, and I'll talk to you soon. Okay, bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Like a stand-up comedian, or does it make you feel like,
no,
like a newscaster?
No, my immediate response was, it reminds me of, sometimes I still do it, but when I was a kid, when I would be alone, which was a lot, I would make food, but I couldn't make food well, but I would make my scrambled eggs. For some reason, I would pretend like I was, when I was a kid, I would pretend like I was Loretta Lynn, and I was doing a cooking show and explaining to you how you make it, and I would do it, and I would always hold a microphone, an imaginary microphone.
Oh, that's great.
In my hand. So when
I love
first
the idea that like a cooking show, you know how everyone on a cooking show is cooking, but also has the extra hand to hold
the
microphone.
Well, the things I was making were simple, so it was like a can of chili, and then you got to undo it with a can opener. Now, I like to use a left-handed can opener.
Oh, my God. Uh-huh. That's so
that's
wonderful.
What this reminded me.
It is, because it's like you picked somebody who's a singer, so you're used to seeing her hold a microphone. So when you transplanted her into the kitchen for her cooking show, naturally, she would still have her singer's microphone.
Yeah. And I don't know why it was Loretta Lynn, but
because
I wasn't really
wonderful.
But it was.
Yeah.
And then as I got older, I would just pretend it was like me.
Yeah.
Like just being really fancy, but it's always something super simple. And when you put the toast in, you're going to want to really make sure you line it up.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you left-handed?
Yes.
Okay.
I am.
It's interesting because I'm sort of looking. All right. So you're holding.
Left-handed.
You're holding. Like I'm right-handed, but I'm holding the mic with my right hand and gesturing with my left hand. You're left-handed, but holding the mic with your right hand.
I like
also gesturing with your left hand.
Yeah. My right hand is only for balance and symmetry. Like,
yeah.
So I do things like hold a thing with this, but if you needed to throw something at me to catch it, I'm gonna do it with this hand,
which I do, and then just immediately
I just caught it.
I threw you a raccoon.
It's a raccoon.
Thank God you were using your
feral cat. Now I have a raccoon and a feral cat all in my left hand. They're very small. Good up and down. I'm left-handed in all of the ways, and I don't exactly know what that means, but
all of the ways. That makes sense to me too. You know, Brandon is also, and I leaned into that so hard when I met him. I mean, I guess I've known him for years, but when I really I understood that he was left-handed, I was like fascinated immediately, because I think I had just recently listened to like a few different podcast episodes where left-handedness was discussed at length in terms of the way your brain works and how artistic people are left-handed. And then some people are like, crazy people are left-handed.
But no, you know what, dudes?
There's a different thing that's happening in there. And I think it's very, like, I found it very attractive. I was like, see, this is,
no, with
I
guys,
love left-handed
it's a totally
people.
Different thing too. Cause I read with people like President Obama and guys, the corpus callosum, the bridge that separates your left and your right, with women, it's naturally more fluid. We can go from what is that, hard facts, concrete stuff, to more like imagery, whatever. We can pass through that bridge. It's a little, the veil is thinner. Mm-hmm. And on a guy, it's like, boom, which is great because they can be very analytical, or a masculine mind anyway, which tends to be dudes, just in, but if they have, if they're left-handed, the corpus callosum is like more fluid.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's what I read. But yeah,
it's, that makes sense to me.
Well, it is a thing spatially, because I know that I just learned how to zest an orange, and I kept picking up the zester, and I'm going, Kirsten, do it away from you. And I was like, there's no way to zest away, because it's a circle. The orange is a circle. So I'm always going to end up at me. Like, I can't, you know, and it happens at work. Sometimes they'll be like, Kirsten, now you're going to turn right. And now everyone's kind of used to it, because I will look down at my hands and stare at them like really hard. And be like, this is the hand I write with, right? It always is the hand.
Yeah.
Always is.
It's the whole, you know, left. It's a whole right-handed world that is really interesting, because it feels like, I mean, this is, again, this is like been addressed in joke form with Ned Flanders on The Simpsons time and again, that he has a, you know, southpaw shop or whatever. Yes. But being around a left-handed person all the time, it really is amazing how possible it seems like it should have been for us to create a world in which both work, and instead of just like the people with more of that dominantly being like, sorry, but we're gonna have
but then we figure it out. We go, I'm gonna flip that around and whatever. Yeah. But I do think it does something with, I know when I was a kid, I had almost zero eye hand coordination, and with this, it made it even more a little complicated. So I was in like special ed PE for like,
I mean, isn't
until
that,
I was like in fourth grade, because it would be like, I couldn't do it. So I wonder if sometimes I like to blame the left handedness on my challenging or my interesting relationship with coordination, which is just different. I'm differently, you know, I can dance freestyle just fine.
Yeah.
And I can actually, I'm pretty good. I just tend to like, you know, things like bicycles. Like
you
I
have
know
to be more like sort of determined or sort of like,
deliberate at first.
Deliberate.
And I know that like, I had heard, I know you're a big bicyclist, and I have friends that are big bicyclists, and I love it so much. And then I get on them, and I can't, I want to do it so bad. I'm tearing up right now thinking about being on a bicycle, and I want to do it. But when I do it, I end up like, my body will veer into any stationary object that is remotely nearby, and I can't stop it. And it's so funny to other people, because I'm famous now for the slow fall. Like, I will fall and I will have 16 opportunities to right myself, and I will be like, whoa, it's happening. It's here ago. And everyone around me will just start laughing. And I'll be like, one time I fell down a flight of stairs, and there were people at the bottom of the stairs, and they couldn't, no one came up, because I guess it was just hilarious to watch me like, here I come.
Yeah. You're making me, but you're describing it so adorably.
I know. It's not
my fault.
That's my, no, it's not. Yeah. It's, that's my, my downfall and my great thing or whatever that I'm now used to is like, I think when I'm like very like, oh, this is very painful. And I'm really tired of this. It is hilarious to people that I don't mean it to be. And I don't mind that it is, because I'm so like, oh, I get it. I never thought, I never think.
Well, usually because when we fall, I think there's something about it that's like, that's sort of outwardly projecting what we all experience when we fall. It's like, usually when you see someone fall, you see them, it happens fast, but to them, it sort of feels like it takes a long time. Right. So if you actually do a slow fall, there's something so humanizing about it, because it's like, oh, that's how I feel when I'm falling, but I know it's faster than that. Yes. So I'm sort of experiencing her fall with her
in a way
that I can't do with other people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I tripped over a cord. I'm going to sit on the floor too. I'm a floor sitter. Please. Is that okay?
Yes. I'm never going to shut you down from sitting on the floor.
Okay, good. I was at work and I tripped over a thing.
Also what we do is rife with potential for a klutz to trip and knock bang. There's so many devices on set that's like, oh, this light that has a weird clamp attached to it that I never would have seen.
And it's
like
dark.
It's an invitation for a lot of disaster. Yeah.
Yeah. There's cords and it's dark, but they were switching out, you know, you get these trailers, you know, which are actually, you know, they're nice. They got a little place to nap. You got a microwave and whatever. And they were switching it out because Paget Brewster, who is a delightful human being, who we're trailer partners, and we've never been trailer partners, and we've decided it's a good, we're very, because you share like a wall, so yeah, you're like,
yep, you want it to be someone that you like, and yeah, you want it to be, you certainly don't want it to be someone that you wish you could talk shit about, who's right in the trailer.
One time
next
it was someone really scary, it yeah was someone who was very intense,
yes,
and I shared it with them for a while, and it was really hard because you'd just be there and it would sound like just boom. And I was like, the yeah density of his feet are like in even the foot slamming, yeah, and you just, oh,
yeah,
but
yeah,
we get along really well. But they had to move her trailer temporarily because they were going to make her couch like nappable. They made mm-hmm our couches mm-hmm sort of more nappable. Mm-hmm. So they were going to make hers more nap worthy and they needed to switch it out. Making this story already, uh-huh, I'm boring myself. But so I'm in the middle of working and Paget comes in and she says, they're switching out our trailers, which means that they're going to give us a temporary trailer. So take everything out that you're going to need.
Right.
And so I'm in there and I'm doing that Steve Martin thing. I'm trying not to. I'm like, no, I need is this essential oil and I need, what else do I need? I need these three plastic forks that I really don't want to keep using plastic forks. So I've been cleaning these. Yes. I need my trays and, I just need that. So I'm gathering the things I need. Uh-huh. I need to have them, uh-huh, but I'm trying to get them fast. So I go and I put them away and then I run back in. And when I run back in, she sort of leaps over this trailer tractor thing, weird thing that's sitting outside. And I'm like, yeah, I can do that in heels. I just leap over and I do a midair classic KV bad fall. And my foot catches on the tractor thing, and I hear myself go, "Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa!" And I'm going down, and I remember my hand hitting, and then one knee, and then the other knee, and then Paget's right there, and I was like, "Oh, are you okay?" I think so. And then they get me up, and I'm bleeding out of my leg, and they call for the medic. And she, within 15 seconds, she's amazing. She goes, has gone to the craft where the food is, gotten a glove, put ice in it, runs back to me. There's blood coming out of my... So meanwhile, the medic's trying to get to me. She's putting it on my thing, and I'm doing EFT tapping. I don't know if you know what that is, uh-huh, uh-huh, but I'm literally, they're trying to get to me and I'm like, even though I just fell and I'm bleeding everywhere, I am not going to bruise and I deeply, completely love it. Except even though I just fell and I feel dumb and I feel like a baby and I'm not going to cry and remind myself when I was a kid and I used to hit my head against the wall, I deeply, and they're looking at me like, what? And I'm like, whatever. And then it healed almost in like 2 days. So I get to prove to everybody that my craziness works.
Let's talk about
works
this. Let's get this. I got to talk about EFT what? Tapping. Let's talk love about it. Tell me about it, because I don't, because here's what happens to me. Uh-huh. I have self-talk, certainly. Uh-huh. I am very much a child on the level of, if I fall and hurt myself, it is this, I see in myself the same process. I see zero difference between the 5-year-old who falls, uh-huh, who, yes, it hurts. Am I going to now commit myself to how much this hurts by crying, because everything in me wants to start bawling and wailing
a little bit,
and you're ashamed, and who saw, and is someone going to look at you? And if I have someone, I mean, I'm a child. Like, yeah, if the person with me just kind of scoops me up and is like, you're okay, then I'm like, I am okay. I'm tough.
Yeah.
Or if someone's like, oh my God, are you okay? My initial response is like, like, yeah. I so am a child.
Yeah.
So tell me about the sort of like tenuous balance of like, okay, this is the, I want to have this reaction, or this has happened, or this is how I'm going to have to take control of the situation. Cause that's what it sounds like to me. EFT
yeah
might be.
Yeah. No, what EFT, I've used it for a bunch of things because I think I get,
what does EFT stand for?
Emotional freedom technique. Okay. I think that's what it stands for. I'm certainly just like I don't totally know about, I just do it because I learned it and I was like, oh, and I need like 85. I mean, I do this with like everything. I need 80, whatever. I need like 85 ways to get to God. I don't have like, this is the way I, even acting, this is the way I act. Right. This is the way I'm not like a person who does. I'm
like, here's my handbook.
Yeah. I wasn't raised with a lot of like ritual at all. So yeah, like I don't have, I really crave it, but I also don't under it, like, well, this doesn't work. I'm gonna try this. So I have to see what kind of place I'm in. And also I don't,
I really relate to all of this, by the way.
Yeah.
To you. Are you an only child?
No.
Okay.
No. I have an older
but
sister.
But you were, you said, you mentioned older. Earlier that you were alone a lot. And so I was alone a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I was sort of, I kind of make this joke. Like, I love my mom very much and she's great. And she's like such a great grandma and everything like that. Sort of raised by wolves. So, like, so it's all that kind of like, when people say like, oh, I wish you'd go back to the simpler times when I was a kid, like I have zero in, like,
yeah.
Please dear God, no, never. Yes. This to me, like,
me
I'm
too.
Having my childhood time, like now, where we peaceful and we gave ourselves.
Because it's a safe place for you to be that person now.
Exactly. Yeah.
I totally get it.
Totally. So, I so often feel like, an interloper. I so often feel like I'm scared. I'm not doing it right. All of this noise, and especially the job we're in. Yeah, there are people that are like that, and it eats them, and they, you know, fear makes you cruel. I don't want to be like that. I don't ever, like, I just, it's just a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff happening all the time, right?
Yes. And we have, and speaking of not having ritual, I mean, this comes up all the time on the podcast, is that, like, we are these, like, strange ethereal creatures, so many of us who do this, who need that structure, but clearly also don't want it, because we keep choosing this thing that, you know, constantly bombards us with new stimuli, which is so exciting and great, and also scary.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I feel like I've manifested a situation. I've been on the same show for 12, we just started 12th season.
That's amazing.
And I was a two-line co-star. I wasn't supposed to even stay on the show.
Yeah.
But, like, I have probably... For everybody else, I have the most consistent job. I feel like I usually work in the exact same location. I sort of do the same kind of thing, but I try to create.
Isn't your character even sort of like a, like the, what your character does?
Mm-hmm.
She is like sort of like her fact cave. Based and kind of
stays in her bat cave. She says
that's fascinating.
She sort of gives all of the exposition. Yep. So my job is to make that exposition interesting and make it happen, you know, try to make it like, okay, when can I make this happen in 2 seconds? Can she figure this out just right now?
Yeah.
Did she already know this? How do you make all that seem sort of interesting? Because it is that, like, I'm that part in Scooby-Doo where, like, they go through the whole show and then you realize, like, oh, the fruit was wax.
Right.
Had we known the fruit was wax.
Who could forget that seminal episode when the fruit turned out to be wax?
You know, the whole time. And I would watch those and be like, I'm going to figure it out this time. And then, like, had I known.
Yes.
You know, that when you walk down the hall, you would notice that there was fresh oil slick.
Uh-huh.
I would have been able to solve the mystery. Yeah. But I sort of play that character. I play the one who comes in and goes, guess what? You know?
Yeah.
And so you want to make, but I get to do that part. I'm totally going off on like 14 different tangents.
Welcome to the podcast.
I do that. Okay.
No, there's no,
I know, I
like me. I try to, like, lasso, like, okay, but put that in the back there.
I'm good at getting back. So I think between the
we're
two
a good
of
pair.
Us, we'll do good. But yeah, so I kind of do the same thing, but I still, outside of it, I tend to have, like, I need to create structure because you're right. But, like, I do end up feeling like such a, I have just, I hate saying that I'm so insecure, but I am. Like, I can be very, like, I kind of walk around like, I don't fit in at all. I don't fit in at all. I don't know what they're talking about. And then sometimes I'll hear myself knowing what people are talking about. And I'm talking about two separate different things. I don't feel like I fit in necessarily all the time. And I've been doing theater forever, and I still don't totally feel like I fit in over there. Like, I know what everyone's talking about, and I don't know the smart thing. I'm smart enough to know I don't know the smart thing. And then I'll go into TV land world, and I feel like I don't know this. And then I'll just culturally, everyone will be talking about, like, restaurants and things. I have no idea what they're saying. And then I will know, and I'll, like, talk, and I'll be like, and there's this part in my head, like, you're a fucking asshole. Like, who are you? Like, don't do that. And then, or the second I will, I'll be like, then I'll get lost again. So I don't know if that's, I do think that that's partially, like, my persona. Like, I taught myself that to be nice or something, like, be a little, like, I sort of persona into this sort of wacky Miss Frizzle kind of, I don't really know, but I know I don't know. And, you know, and I'm willing.
Right.
I'm willing to go into the molecule and figure it out. Like, I do feel like I kind of do that. But I think that back to the EFT tapping thing, there was something, all of these thoughts that I have all the time that kind of make me crazy, that are also kind of my gold, I think, in terms of like when I write and stuff, but they can be horrible, especially when you take them too seriously, or you think like you're the only person in the world to think these things, or they're somehow valuable for the sake of them existing or something. That I found short circuits that, because what you do is, you can look it up online. The thing I love about it is that it's entirely like a free thing. And if you do it wrong, you're not hurting anything. And if you do it right and you're somebody that it can help, it just helps. So you tap on acupressure points. You could like look it up online.
I know what tapping is.
You get to say.
I guess I forgot that there
whatever
was
whatever horrible things are going on in your head, which seems so counterintuitive to sort of like what I usually do.
Yeah.
You get to say whatever horrible things are going on, and just and the idea is that it, you know, I think the idea is that in the, you know, the really 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 you knows better. Right. So you're sort of getting it out. Mm-hmm. In a way, and rewiring your brain. And they did a really interesting study with, like, they found cab drivers in London, very stressful job, and they had them do this, and their amygdala, like, I think it shrank like a huge percentage.
Interesting.
So it's one
and
of
your
those,
amygdala is like sort of lizard brain, the
exactly.
sort of fear, like this sort of like the part of my brain I always try to say, these guys know, is that extra conversation, that like one extra step of conversation with your own brain where you're like, you know what? I need to separate from you for a second so I can address you. Thank you so much for trying to help me.
Yeah.
I don't need to be terrified right now. Uh-huh. That's real old. And I'm not going to die. Uh-huh. So if you could just step back, let me handle this.
I know. But it's hard.
But it's a way. But
because your imagination,
that is another
the reason
way of,
why you get to do what you do is because of your imagination. Yeah. And your imagination is the thing that's going, I think that maybe, you know, like at that, you know, I was giggling at myself the other day. There was this whole thing, it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and they were saying, you know, how Hillary Clinton is having flies land on her. That was this thing. Did you hear this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I heard that. And I have a moment where I go, wait a minute. What if that's true? And you know, I really know it's not, but my imagination is so big that it starts going, whoa, what if they're, I gotta take this into account. And then you have that thing like, but that part of my brain can just, it's its own thing, you know? And I really feel for people who don't have enough information or tools at their disposal or whatever, because that thing just goes, because that whole mythology wouldn't even come to be if it wasn't for people with big imaginations and no way in which to, no other part of their brain or weird tapping thing or whatever we do to get us through the day.
Yeah, kind of thing.
And it's so dumb because I have like the most beautiful life and I have the ability to have the champagne problem of like, to tap that, you know, but it's like that anxiety or whatever that is that lives in you, you know, it's always there. I don't think it matters if you were the prom queen your whole life and you didn't get a pony 1 year. That pain is pain and fear is fear. And it's always just going to come up how it's going to come up. But
no, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. And I think, and I also think that that understanding of that and the ability to learn how to work with it too only expands your empathy and only, you know what I mean? It's so informative, not just for work. I know you're saying this, but like also for relationships with other people. And it's kind of, I've been watching Survivor again. It was like a thing that I saw maybe through the third season and was like, I get it. I get why everyone's freaking out about it. And then like a couple of years ago, all of a sudden, you know, just at some point it was like, I guess my cool friends are watching Survivor. Maybe I need to check this out again. And so I sort of dove back into it. And there's a girl on this season who is maybe the closest to how I feel I would be in that environment, which is to say I would never go on Survivor for so many reasons.
Yeah.
And so that's part of it, right? Is that sort of like experience of watching something going like, I can't believe these are just regular people who are obviously not regular because they've made the decision to do this, which to me feels so counterintuitive on so many levels.
Right.
Not the least of which is if I'm going to be on television, I want my environment as controlled as possible because this will live forever. But you know, like seeing this girl who's young, you know, she's part of the millennial group because it's here. It's the season. It's millennials versus Gen Xers, which is something they're pushing real hard. Like, well, millennials, as you know, are this kind of person, whereas Gen Xers are this kind of person. Like, I feel like everyone's the same, but okay.
Yeah.
But there's a young girl on it who's, you know, very early on, you sort of see that she's like kind of neurotic and paranoid, and you're like, oh no, how are you going to do with no sleep and no food, you know? And she has a panic attack while she's not even doing anything,
right,
which actually makes sense to me because it's like, oh, if I were competing in the challenge, I would be fine.
Yeah.
But sitting off to the side, just being in my body and thinking about how tired I am and thinking about how thirsty I am and da da da, and that's when she spins out. And so she's so embarrassed and ashamed because she's like, oh my God, my teammates are all working hard on this incredibly taxing challenge and I'm the one who like almost passes out as I'm sitting on the sidelines. I was like, check, got that.
Yeah.
And then as she's shaking and the medic comes over, she's like, I can't tell which is panic and what's and which is real.
Absolutely.
And I was like, my sister, you sweet thing. And then just here, and so watching this play out where, you know, she looks at the medic and she goes, you're not gonna let me die, right? And I started crying. Oh, I was like, this poor little girl. And then I was so mad at her. I was like, you're not supposed to be on Survivor.
Yeah. Why did you do that?
Like, you know, but I want her to overcome it and make it to the end and be like, I can't believe I survived this, because it, in her case, there is a real survival thing happening because her survivor instinct is like, freak out. You're dying. This is happening. You're not going to, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And clearly you're saying it was genuine. You bought it. It wasn't like,
oh, 100%. They had, this girl was ashamed that she felt that way and ashamed that she needed to be told that. And that's something that I can relate to so well, because so many times, particularly when I was younger, but even sometimes still now, if like I have to go through a medical procedure or there's something I'm scared of, I am a child. I mean, I have to have, I look at the doctor and I'm smart enough and cynical enough to say, hey, I'm this asshole, but like, I'm not going to die though, right?
Right.
For sure though, right?
Oh yeah.
Like, I know I'm crying right now and I'm sort of making fun of myself for crying, but I still really need you to tell me this.
Oh, I do the same
thing. It's so many layers. Yeah.
And I think that that's, I'm aware of it enough, but there's lots of moments in my life where I end up like, tears well up in my eyes. I'm like, I'm just going to tell you how I'm feeling right now. But this is what's happening.
Yeah.
And I am, like you said, I'm aware enough to know that like what's coming through me right now is my past. What's coming through me right now is, but this is really genuinely my belief, and I'm not gonna, but that's a testament to you, because some people, I think that there's more people than not that do that, and they do a lot of other things to cover up from coming out. And then what that does to a person when they put up all those walls and all those things, and that's when you get these really sort of completely out of their body, out of touch, out, can't relate. You know what I mean?
And, or you get sick. And I'm not, believe me, guys.
No.
I am that's like, you create your own cancer. No one's saying that. Because some of my favorite people in the world who had the most beautiful life and the best relationship with themselves and their family have died of cancer.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying that. Do I think it's also possible? Because cancer is a very complicated thing that everyone's body has a different reaction to.
Because when you have an emotional reaction, what happens? We all know
your blood pressure can have
Eclipse. Basically, you're having a squirt of hormones, right? Yes. Every time, negative or positive, a squirt of hormones go through your body. So if for whatever reason, no one's fault,
right,
for whatever reason, those squirts of hormones are coming out, something happens.
We can make ourselves sick, and other things can make us sick.
And I'm
we
not
can
even
make ourselves, it can be environmental, it can be genetic, it could be inside. There's so many things that we, but like, how can we try to have a better relationship with the things we can control, I guess.
Yeah. And also, I do this with myself with small things, and it's, I think it would be very difficult to do. And it is when I've had it difficult to do with large things, but like to denote anything or anybody as bad, as wrong, when like whatever the punchline is. And I don't know, obviously someone going through a ton of pain and dying, if we're going to extend this all the way to like cancer or something like that, of course I think that'd be terrible. I would wish that on anybody. But to denote pain or anything that happens to anybody as or to denote a human being as like wrong or bad, I feel like is you get yourself into a really
tricky.
You start doing black and white and right and wrong. And I think we live so much in a world now where it's so easy to go black and white and right and wrong that it's really probably the path of least resistance.
It is. And that's a fear-based thing too. And that's what makes it so hard to feel like to feel like such a cliche bleeding heart liberal, which I 100% do. And I'm not 100% comfortable with it because I kind of envy the, and believe me, I know that I have wonderfully fiscally conservative listeners on the program. We've talked at length with people about this sort of non emotional side of being conservative, I have no problem with. But I understand someone's frustration when they've found a way to see life as black and white. I wouldn't trade that. I couldn't trade that because I know too much now about my own heart. Yeah. But do I envy someone who's like, hey, you're a killer, you deserve to die? There's some little part of me that's like, God, you're sure. That's amazing. I could never make that decision. I could never be president. Yeah. I could never, because I'm constantly like, well, I do see from your point of view that, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so.
And I find myself like, I usually, like on social media, I'm very shy. The talking is sort of like a learned behavior mixed with like, if I'm just really upfront, no one's going to ask me questions, going to catch me off guard because I'm already giving the impression that I'm an open book, which I am.
Right.
And I am pretty comfortable, I guess if the word is, with my own shame and whatever. But I don't really interface a lot on like social media. Like I'll post something, but I have a very like, it's very curated. I'm very aware of what I'm going to do. And I'm very aware that I work on a, it's like torture porn, the show I'm on. And it's on at 9 p.m. at night.
Conversations I've had with Padgett too.
9 p.m.
I see some of the stuff that comes at you.
I'm able to curate even that. Like I'm able to weed that out of what I actually see at work. And I think it would be really arrogant of me to be like, oh, I get freaked out at night with all this perfect health insurance and I get my job. You know what I mean? It would be so dumb. So, but a lot of people in very conservative places watch our show. And especially right now when we're in like election world, I'm very careful about like, I don't want to shove, there's no need for that. There's no need to shove anything down anybody's throat about anything. And it really at the end of the, we can all agree, it's a weird, wacky world we're living in right now. But I had posted something that I thought was really beautiful. I thought it was beautiful. So like my intention of something like that, if it makes me feel like, I love it. And I'm going to post that because I just love it. And this guy I know, this kid in New York, made this really cool video with Alicia Keys. And she was sort of, you know, getting the ghost and kind of speaking from her heart. I really liked it. And I was so proud that he made this thing. Yeah. And I reposted it. And I thought he'd get a little more attention. And immediately someone was like, well, how could, you know, what do you think about the blood on the hands of her from Benghazi? And my old thing used to be is that I would just be like, let that person just be and have their opinion and sort of energetically kind of be like, I see you. But I was like, I'm gonna, because we're so divided and things are so like that right now, I feel like I want to live in a world where I can talk to someone, you know, and just be like, so I sent her I think I did it right. If you don't do the period at the beginning, it's just to them, right?
Yes. Okay. Correct. 100%.
So I did it just to her. And I was like, hey, you know, I see, like, I'm not, I don't have an answer to you because I wasn't there at that thing, nor were you.
Right.
We're all reading things and going through, like, and I don't know who's responsible for X and Y and Z.
That's right.
I know my heart and I know my truth and that's all I can do. And that's all I'm expecting you to do. And then she wrote me back. And what I find is as long as you're like, sort of like give people, I heard this once and I do think it's true. And
because you don't respond and say like, hey, crazy bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Cause all love is at the end of the day, all love is space.
Right.
You're just giving space. So the more space you can give, whether that be your own stuff or another person's stuff, that's good. You know, like just you have, and when you think about it in your own body at any given time, you can make a universe of space if you needed it, you know? And so, of course, I have a thing where like, you want to be like, come on. Like, because especially,
just because I feel like I have empathy, that's the other thing I was saying, doesn't mean I don't also, I'm not quick to anger because all of those things are right at the surface, right? Yeah. So that's the irony. The terrible irony is here I am in my little glass house going like, oh, la, 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 God, how dare you say it's right and wrong to do this?
Right.
If someone murdered someone I care about in front of me, I feel like I would kill them so fast.
Right.
But that's part of the reason I have to kind of stay in check with going, I don't know, man. Like, I don't, I say I'm a bleeding heart liberal, but like, I also feel like my lizard brain is extraordinarily powerful. Yeah. Hence, you know, panic and anxiety.
Yeah.
So I really don't know what I would do under pressure. I have no idea. Yeah,
I don't either.
I might brutally snap someone's neck in a moment of fury. I don't know.
Yeah, I do know. I grew up poor and I grew up in the Central Valley of California, which is probably, if you were to split up California, that is the red part of California.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
If you go there,
it's I'm in a different world now. What happened?
Yeah,
I'm
Trump
still in California.
Signs, yeah. Everywhere. And I had a friend who just did some children's theater there and she was like, I'm going to drive by where I used to live. And it was this weird, awkward, like, Kirsten, did you live here? And you're like,
what I imagined this experience being like is not what I'm.
There's no pavement. And I grew up not having, you know, and my parents were both teachers. My dad wasn't around. And so we had those 3 months. We didn't have food. Like, and we didn't have, I didn't have things. I didn't
have. How much older is your sister, by the way?
3.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. And I remember being in fifth grade and when we all had to like talk about our greatest day in fifth grade, my greatest day was the day that Jimmy Carter was going to bring back the hostages. That was my greatest day. So I feel like there's something in me that is almost infuriatingly like, it's almost defiantly punk rockishly like, fuck you. I'm a fucking like, I do it when I drive. Like I infuriate my friends. Like they have somewhere to go. Like I'm very like, what? Like, I don't mean to be, but it actually makes people angry. Like how sort of like I want, because I felt so powerless for such a long time that for me, I take like radical responsibility of everything that happens to me. And I really try to do that. Now, just like you said, I think the shadow side of me does the exact opposite and feels like I'm totally, and that's all happening to me and all that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But that part of me, I feel like that's like, I try to talk to someone like, stop trying to, you know, especially when I engage, I've been engaging just a little bit with someone who will like push back at me about my liberal leanings or whatever. And, or they'll just be mean. And I have to just be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Me saying that I like this, I'm not trying to take away your pain. I'm not trying to take away what's happened to you that's hard. And this person expressing that, there's no risk to you. This is not a starvation economy in my mentality. This is abundance mentality where everybody gets to have their feelings and everybody, there's enough for everybody. What can we just fucking pretend? And even if there's not enough money, and I know this from having my $500 a month apartment that I couldn't afford and not being able to pick up my phone because there were credit counseling bureau people calling me and having 3 jobs and being a total loser. Like I know this from that like even when that's happening and you have nothing in the bank account, you can always find a lot of something, whether that be you live in a place that's got a big park. And I know this can make people really angry because when they don't have it, but I went for a long period of time when I didn't have it.
It's really different when you can say, I promise I'm speaking from experience.
Oh, I promise I'm speaking from experience. I've had this job for, like I said, I've been on the 12th season of this job particularly.
Well, that's what I love. That's the other thing I love is like the craziness of the kind of person that ends up doing what we do. Again, it's different than, I invested in real estate and you know I worked at McDonald's and then I was real invested in real estate. I did plays.
I did a lot of plays.
So the artistic when the artist goes from poverty to I'm doing great.
Yeah.
And you can sort of have a humility about that and you can connect with the absurdity of what that means. It can definitely incite plenty of guilt, but hopefully it also, you know, again, keeps that empathy going and ground someone to where you're going, all right, listen, I'm very in touch with what it feels like to be that person.
Yeah. My friends, like it was 12 years ago that, you know, whenever right before this happened, when I had a couple things here and there, which make you feel like, I made it. It doesn't, you know, and they're like, oh, I got to go back to substitute teaching. But like, I didn't have, my car would spontaneously stop. There was something electrically wrong with it. And I didn't have enough money to get it. You know, like you go to the mechanic and you're like, you're paying for like them to look at it. And then you have to pay more for them to fix it. or they think they fixed it. I had one of those like mechanics, like, we think we got
you
it.
You should be good. Yeah. What do you mean you should be good?
But he's so cheap. So you're going and then it would happen again. So I would be just driving and it would just spontaneously cease to work, which is terrifying in a place like Los Angeles on, say, like where the 10, where you're downtown. That's a terrifying thing. And but sometimes it would just be my gas. I had no gas. But I remember one time I was in the car that didn't work, and I was in the car with my friend, and I was out of gas, and the car, I couldn't decide whether the car wasn't starting because the electrical thing or wasn't starting because I didn't have any gas. But we're at the gas station, so I'm digging in my purse, and I'm like, oh, I can get my credit card out. Like it doesn't. I know it's not going to work. And then like trying to get change, and then my friend who has no money too, like giving me $3 out of her purse. I'm like, Kirsten, you got to get home, because I didn't live in LA. I couldn't live in LA. It was too expensive. So I was living in Artesia, which is this adorable little town. If you live around Los Angeles, you should go there and eat some Indian food and enjoy it. And then the Cerritos Library is there, and they have a full-sized T-Rex skeleton, and you can just read a book right next to it. So anyway, I just remember that was like that kind of like, I'm taking the $3 from my friend, like, all, and it wasn't that I wasn't working like everybody else has to, you know, now. And I don't know how it all works and shakes down, but like, I just mean that, like, I know what that's like. I know intimately what that's like. Yeah. I know, you know, and there's a lot of people that get it. There's a lot of people that make it happen late. I always used to say, like, but then what's the worst thing that happened? Like, I kept going after what I wanted. Like, so if you keep going after what you want, the worst thing that's going to happen is someone's going to say, have you met Kirsten? She's 85. She's a kind of a loser. Like, she can't really pay her rent. She lives in this apartment, whatever, but she's happy. Like, that's the worst thing that's going to happen. And the best thing that's going to happen is something else. Like, but you have to do it a little bit, because once you let that thing out, if you put it away, and that means any, whatever your thing is, like making soup or whatever, mm-hmm. if you stop making soup, it's just not okay for the world, right? Because you know you're supposed to be doing it because you want to do it. So you don't do it because you're going to get paid for it. You do it because you want to do it. You know what I mean? Like, that's the end of the conversation. So like, that was something that had flipped over in my brain early enough that I was like, I'm just gonna live on cat food and just do this.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask. That's what I actually wanted to get to is a couple of thoughts of having. And I always feel bad because I don't want to, when someone mentions a tough experience, but it's oblique enough that I don't want to dig in too much if you don't want me to dig in. Yeah. And I don't want you to feel you have to tell someone else a story like your mom but I was surprised when you said that your mom was a teacher, because I guess in my mind, when I think about a responsible parent versus an irresponsible parent, right, you sort of go, well, mom wanted to be a singer, or mom worked at it. And then, you know, that idea of like, well, she was responsible for the welfare of children that weren't you. Yeah. And so there is that sort of like, well, what was going on?
I can tell you enough that without removal of some proper nouns and things that, that I think are good. No, my mom is a genius. My mom is one of the best teachers ever. And, she's like 74, I think. And she's still like, I can't even get a hold of her most of the time, cause she's half of the morning. She's helping her friends that are still teachers, cause she speaks Spanish, and she's doing like a lot of like small groups when they can't right now with the big classes and whatever. And, she's fantastic. No, I think that, my mom was like, kind of like so great and didn't know how great she was, and met a very charismatic man. And so my dad was like very charismatic. I was like, he's an opera singer at Santa Monica Community College.
Adorable.
And he's doing this and what, and he couldn't really, you know, he's very gregarious, bigger than life, kind of, you know, like how most, bless his heart, because he has died. And I got to say that in the last, I think he died like 5 years ago. We have such a good relationship now that he has passed over. And it is not the person that raised me. And I know that probably sounds nuts. And so like I sit around and talk to him, but I had a energetic feeling about it for what it's worth. And he clearly was my spiritual friend, because the amount of nonsense that came from that produced me, my mom, and my sister, these three women. I think it's astonishing. My mother changed at like six, in her 60s, in her 50s, like she started to shift as a person. And you never hear that happening. So the ability to watch your own parent, like open up and be brave at that, at an age where you're not yet, you go like, oh my God, I can do that. Like,
oh, the best.
Do you know what I mean? It's amazing. Best. And so he didn't, if it wasn't for him, it wouldn't afford that ability. And my sister is like, she met this like dreamboat of a dude when she was like 20 and she got like almost immediately married because I think she was like obsessed. Like, wait, this isn't like the kind we have at home. And it was just like, just nabbed him, had two kids. And so my nieces, when I was like, I was 18 doing a show and my sister was birthing my first niece. So like they're, you know, they're in their 20s, but I always sort of feel like I'm very related to them, you know, age-wise, I get it where they're always coming from. Mm-hmm. And they're all just like, they're so connected, so connected as a family. And so if it wasn't for all of that, and you know, a lot of stuff that I write about and the stuff that I'm fascinated about is like relationships, sexuality, male, the masculine and feminine and how that works, about aggression versus passivity and what place it all lies in. Vaginas, like all these things that fascinate me, I wouldn't have gotten if I wasn't around a really tumultuous, confusing, mm-hmm. I had just a totally different bizarre relationship with my father that I was responsible for way more than I knew. And it gives me a perspective because I've never had a vantage point that's nothing but I remember what it's, I've always had this part in me that's talking me through what's happening and it's never gone away. Like it doesn't grow up because it had to kind of understand or try to understand in this really bizarre way, stuff that kids, I think more often than not, kids have to understand.
Yeah.
But that journey of like, oh my God, getting grown up with like having, and I looked really odd when I was growing up and I got bullied a lot.
What did you look like? Oh, I have a picture.
I looked like It's Pat from Saturday Night Live.
I've seen your picture. I don't know what you would have to do to stop my journey of adoring you that has happened so immediately from like the moment we met, but that only solidified it further. And that's not to say, again, it's not I think you could have sent me any picture and whatever was organically you then is still you now. And so you see it. So I don't mean like if you had just been like this foxy, gorgeous, like, woo, I probably also would have been like, she's the best. Like, I think we're past the point of, but you know, you just, that vulnerability of seeing what you look like and how different you are now. And just immediately I was like, oh, like you're not going to tell me that you were like, well, I remember when I was, you know, voted prettiest and, you know, I was the prom queen, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Like, obviously that wasn't coming. Yeah, so
that wasn't.
You had a nice androgynous thing going.
I did. And it's so funny because
you look so and different now. Do you feel like you had an aware, like, because I look at some of the stuff, the choices I made, and I, of course, now can look back and maybe I'm right and maybe I'm wrong, but I can sort of assign this sort of like, I think maybe that was because I had this thing happen that I was like maybe hiding from, or I, you know, I didn't know how to be that girl. Yeah. So I was this one instead.
I didn't know I was androgynous. Like I actually still look at that and I can tell you just from living inside of my body.
Yeah.
I was trying really hard to be very girly.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
And so there was that, but then also like, I didn't know, you know, I didn't come from a place. It took me until when I was 17, I started staying, and my mom was very open about it. My dad wasn't around a lot to really say one thing or the other, but I started to stay at a friend's house because I didn't really have friends, and I started having a couple of friends in like drama class. And so 16, 17, this guy that I was friends with, I didn't know he was gay at the time, but you know, you look back and you're like, purple creepers and shoulder pads. I should have known. But, oh, I had such a crush. We'd be on the phone and I don't know what normal is. I know my normal. And I'm very transparent. So I would be at school and I would just be like, so last time my dad couldn't, and I wrapped my hands around his stomach and then he helped him puke. Like, you don't realize what you're saying. And even when I say that to you now, like, or whatever, things in my head, I've learned that they're bizarre. I learned that that's not what someone else might have, but you're not I didn't have
the experience. Your reality is your reality, and that's the most absurd things are normal for kids. Yeah,
some things were, you know, people have had way more horrible stuff that's happened. I'm not trying to but you know, I would just say things, and because my parents were, my dad was a band teacher in the community, it was odd, and we moved sometimes out of strange reasons that I couldn't totally understand. And I get really weird talking about it because I love my mom so much. And Italian families are very similar. My mom's Italian. My dad's Norwegian. But my mother is... Italian families are very similar to almost like... Yeah.
That's the most emotionally unavailable right. culture with the most emotionally volatile culture.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. But my mom... it's similar to, I was just reading that Hillbilly Elegy, and the idea that Appalachian people, this sort of this is private, you don't tell people. That's very similar to how my mother was it doesn't matter that it's, you just don't tell people. And my mom was trying so hard at the time, the girls need a father, people need a father. And she didn't know. And she thought, I think she thought so low of herself, and she had that same thing that I have where I'm like, oh, am I doing it? And you have to transcend it in a moment to moment, second to second basis. You have to be like, nope, you're just worth it just because you want it. You don't got that. Nope. But it's a constant thing. So my point is I would have this friend come and take me to his house, and you go to someone else's house and you're like, what? Like, you learn things that are normal that you just didn't know. Like, I didn't know there was such a thing. This is so stupid, but it's true. I didn't know there was such a thing as washing your neck. Like, I didn't know that was a thing because I was so afraid of water and I was so afraid of the soil. I would always be so fast about it all. So when I learned about neck washing, it was like, wait, these lines go away? Like, because you get these lines in your thing, and it was like really cool. Like, it wasn't ever like, nobody ever washed my neck. It was like, oh, wow. And my mom is great. My mom is the best. And my dad was a very creative person. I wasn't right. I think that sometimes it informs my choices. Sometimes you're going to make me terrified. informs my choices of people, of the way I can perceive things sometimes. And it sometimes I have to pull myself out, like a moment to moment basis. Like, no, that's not how people are supposed to treat you. That's not how that works. But I do it so often that it can really make you feel dumb. Like, I can feel like a dumb a lot, where I'm like, damn it, I'm doing it, that thing again. But you have to have a lot of compassion, because that's just something that's going to come up. But when I was a kid, I didn't know. And I wanted so badly. And oh my God, I still fucking have that. And it's now, look at the fucking job I have. It's so badly to be pretty. Just be pretty. And I didn't understand fashion or anything. And I was very into making my own things. And I had a hat that I made, and I wrote on tempura paint on the back of it, I am a happy idiot. I thought that was hilarious. Thought that was so funny, and people would love it. They don't, they just beat you up. But I was like, I would come up with these outfits and be like, this is going to work today. And then you'd go to school, and then oh my God, Damon Hyatt, who I loved, would talk to me.
Of course, his name was Damon Hyatt. Oh my God. Hyatt.
His dad was the head of the basketball court. He was the basketball coach at Porterville High School. And he would wear, our colors were green and orange, and he would wear half shirts to school.
Amazing.
His dad would let him use the basketball gym outfits from the high school. He was in fifth grade, and he could fill them out. And he would I'd go to school, and I'd have my outfit and my thing or whatever in whatever class, and be like, I'm doing it today. And never ever would do it, and have these brief moments of the cutest boy or the prettiest girl in school. I was really good at making the prettiest girl love me, and then she would tell me that she loved some dude, and then I would get so upset, because why doesn't she love me? Why am I not? Or why doesn't he love me? Right. Or why doesn't? But what I can do is I can make him love you. So I was really good at that Cyrano-y kind of a thing. I was really good at stuff like that. But I didn't. I never. I knew it because people would say it to me, and then I got really good at making the joke before you made the joke. Yeah. And what was weird is, I'm not going to say any names and I'm not going to say anything, but I just had this, it was so bizarre. I had this experience. I got this little part in this thing, and I was doing it, and somebody that I have looked at before and been like, oh, that person is, we were improvising and they started saying,
oh no,
things about me. And it was
in like, character to your yeah, character.
It was like they tapped in. Now in real life, if I was all the things that that person was saying, that would be not funny. Right. But if you're a little bit right, but it was like, they were saying stuff that I think about myself that I keep secret. And I turned into myself as a kid where I was making everybody laugh so hard because I know what you're going to say about me and I can make it funnier for you. And I kept doing it to the part that like everybody was like, this is, and I don't even remember what I said, but I used to do that all the time when I was a kid. I was so good at it. And I was just used to it. And then what became bizarre is having people appreciate the way you look. And then you're like, it's almost infuriating sometimes. Like, and I've had that now. I go back and forth because I play a very certain kind of character, and I've got a weird, we're all both, right? I'm like weird looking, and I'm totally like, oh, you look like, I don't know, whatever the fuck people go, like, that's the way you're supposed to look. I can look both ways depending upon a fucking camera angle and a whatever, right? So like, but people will come up and be like, oh, you're so much prettier in real life, or you're so much thinner, or you're the same as I wanted you to be, or you look like me. And they, and it's such a weird thing, like looks and what you base it on and rate it on. And I spent such a long time. I mean, really, some people see those pictures of me and go like, oh, you were adorable. When you really look at them and be like, you know, Barb on Stranger Things now, everyone like loves Barb, right? I'm like, fuck, if I, because it was basically like Barb, right? If it was now, I'd be like adorable and celebrated for my weirdness. But it definitely like informs you because you come from like a whole different world. And people would, you know, there was this whole thing that like acid came out of my boobs, and so I would get chased after, and you try to squeeze my boobs, and then you know, you'd scream because acid would get in your eyes. Which in one way, you're like, that sounds terrible. But another way, when you're the one and they've made up this whole mythology, now I'm just like, don't get it in your eye. And the other thing that was always infuriating about it is I would get beat up, and while I would be getting punched, I would say, I'm a pacifist. My favorite thing to say would be, I'm a pacifist, or I'm basically Kermit, which I don't know what I meant by that, but that would be the thing I would say. So I had it happen so much that I just got really used to and friendly with my shame, you know? So that's like,
comedy, my dear.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
I'm listening to you saying this, and I'm like, God, you know, that's where some of your favorite, I mean, I don't do stand-up, and I never ever
I don't
would,
do stand-up either.
And I never
and
will.
People always go like, do you do stand-up?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
I'm like, I'll just be the person that maybe would have been okay at that, but I can just have my own private stand-up world where I don't have to worry if anyone else is laughing because I'll just maybe think it's funny.
Right.
But that, you know, that sort of arc of that relationship where you see someone like, for example, Patton, right? That's exactly what I thought. And I know I'm thinking about it a lot anyway, because this morning, right before you got here, yeah, I was reading this New York Times interview with him where he talks about Michelle dying. Yeah. And so, yeah, full disclosure, like, yeah, less than an hour before you got here, I was sobbing. Oh. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this podcast with Kirsten, because it just like, I went from 0 to 60. Like, I woke up, there was an article about Patton. I was just performed with him last night. He's not a close friend of mine. I've known him for a long time, yeah, and yeah, I really look up to him as a comedian. Yeah. Part of what makes him so brilliant and so beloved is his incredible honesty and his humor about himself.
Right.
And so you see someone who has figured that out professionally in a very similar way to me that you have, which is somehow managing to tap into all of the brutality that other people project, and even worse, the brutality we can bring into, yeah, ourselves. It's, yeah, like, I'll take what you're saying, and I promise you, you will poke me with a pen. By the time it gets to my heart, it's a dagger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I'll make it a dagger for, yeah, you. Don't worry.
That's so well said.
You know, yeah, what I mean? Yeah. And he's just so articulate, and he's such a beautiful writer. And as he's kind of describing this experience, of losing her, I'm just like, I've lost it because it pushes all my buttons. It's someone I know. It's someone I look up to. It's a relationship I observed and thought was magical. It's my own fear of dying. It's my own fear of getting what I want and then having it torn away from me as cruelly as possible, right? So that's the part of the anxiety and the fear. It's like, oh, don't worry. It never goes away because when things get good, you just know they're going to fall apart. And then maybe you're going to manifest them falling apart or you'll cause them falling apart. So you can really just like spiral out. But that's what it really made me think of is this idea of like, how do I, what's my relationship to being compassionate with myself? And that's a fine line to walk, right? Is that ability to, well, don't worry, I'll just say it first. And if I say it first, I have the power over it. Yeah. So if I'm standing in front of an audience talking about the fact that I look like a hobbit, I'm saying what you're thinking, so I'm in charge.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
But the thing that I learned from that experience that I just had was the part that it was whose fault it was my fault, because when you're a kid and there's nobody in the room, meaning in your body, to take care of you, because I spent so much of my life being like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. So I'm going to pop out, see what you're doing, and I'm going to copy you because that's the best I can do right now. Because I know what I'm going to choose is going to be so crazy. So I'm just going to copy kind of what you're doing and then no one's going to notice. So but then there's no one in the room. But when you're an adult, somebody has to be there for you. And what I realized from that experience was, oh my God, how often I walk around with nobody in there for me. And that's inexcusable. And it was one of those, like, I had to, obviously I've been touching in on that for a long time. And I feel like I didn't mean to brush over at all what you were saying, which was just so
valuable. Oh God, no, there's no brushing.
I just meaning like,
what am I going to do? Sit here?
I want to be reverent. I feel like, let's just read that article aloud. I really do. I get it. But I realized that it'd been a long time coming of like, you know, like you, there's that, what is that called? You know, unconscious incompetence, right? I had been in conscious incompetence for such a long time about this. And I feel like I just bumped into conscious competence a little bit about like, wherever you are, Kirsten, just be on your side. Like, you don't even have to be right. You don't have to be whatever. But if I had been in that situation and I knew there was somebody in here going, I got you. Like, it's okay. Whatever. It was just aware instead of like, what's going on, and just sort of, I become like a, like open the, it's like opening up the floodgates. Like I always feel like my inner child, that inner part of you is the artist, right? She's the one that you have to kind of coax out and go, come on, girl, it's safe. It's safe. So basically what I did that day is went, it's okay, baby. You're safe. And then I fed her to fucking wolves. And you know what I mean? And that's not okay. Yeah. Like it's okay to go, baby, it's okay. This is scary.
Yeah.
I got you. We're going to get juice afterwards. Yes. We're going to be okay. Yes, there's a way to do that. That I could have done the same thing instead of like, I'm going to bang you around because the next time I go to do something, she's
you're
like,
not going to come out.
Fuck off. Like, it, you know, it's a weird thing. And I know that like, I have this, I write a lot of like solo stuff because a long time ago when I wasn't, I like doing it because it keeps me, I could literally right now, like if I didn't, I could just do it right here. Like I just need a box of my things. I can talk loud enough. I can do it wherever I want and I can do it whenever I want. And it's like a living document. It's a thing I'm constantly kind of spinning over, but I do it when like I'm a member of Theater of Note. I do it when we need money. Like if we need to like, oh, we got to pay the rent all of a sudden, or we do a fundraiser, or I'll do it I'll do it like for 2 days, but I've never done like an actual like run of it. And I think it's like, it's pretty good. Like people who see it, they want to come and see it again, whatever. But I don't do that because it's like, I've still am learning, like I'm going to get up and I'm going to kind of overshare. And it's, you know, if someone in my past came and watched it, they wouldn't know, like you wouldn't be able to tell what is, or what is it, you know, real or not, or what's real in my head and whatever. But I find myself, I play small like that. Like I have this big job on this television show that like all kinds of people watch, but like, oh, I do all these other things, but you would have to like go in the night at 11 p.m. on a Tuesday and then I'm not doing it. And I want people to see it. That's the crazy thing. Like, I'm like, I want to win an Ovation Award for best one person. Real bad, but I'm not, I haven't, you know what I mean? But that putting it out there in that way is so, it's so much. And but I think it's a belief I have of like, oh, if I put it out there, it's going to get taken.
Of course. I think something. That makes sense.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I also think that there's this thing that happens where, I mean, for me anyway, that again, it's all part and parcel to this sort of the fragility and the vulnerability that we all have on the inside, which is why can't I apply the comfort that I have now established with at least this little part of my success or even my failure or whatever, mm-hmm. and apply it to this other thing that also has this appeal or that also feels important on some level. Right. But it becomes like untranslatable. Like, I was nominated for fucking Emmy this year. I have found every way possible to shit on that. Aside from like, right. It's deserved from the person who created the thing that I got to be a part of that I got to, but like, this is how I feel still. I'll never be nominated for an Emmy. Like, not right, a real Emmy. Right. Do you know what I mean? Not a real one.
Exactly.
I don't know if everyone like us is like that. I don't think so, but I think a lot of us are, where it's like, I don't want to raise my expectations. Like, I mean, yeah, I do the one person show. People seem to like it in the context that I present it, because there's no stakes. But like, if I did the same thing and I put everything into it, then there's so much at stake. And then if someone thinks it's great and then they want to do this other thing with it, that's scary. Or if somebody says that it's stupid, then I've let someone say it's stupid.
Right. Or so, those people that really loved it, what if it was just that one time and I was great then? Right. Kirsten, the talking version, Kirsten out, is so
like,
amazing.
The encourage, like, the amount that you encourage yourself to feel shitty about stuff versus, and I'm not saying anything new here, the amount of the tiniest morsel that you're like, oh, I can live off this and feel shitty about it for years.
Exactly.
Versus like, how do I talk myself out of this wonderful feeling I'm having right now?
Number one, it's absurd. Number one, I would like to say congratulations on that, regardless of what you're going to do with it. Number two.
I did it again. I understand.
Because if you were to say thank you, you'd get a giant fat head and you'd be a big fat head. And we don't want that to happen.
And someone else would be there to say, you know, it's not a real Emmy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So let me say that. I'll say it for you.
There's a book I really like called The Big Leap. Do you know this book?
Mm-mm.
And it's written by this guy named Gay Hendricks, who's kind of a genius, I think. And he talks about how people have a happiness threshold, right? So you get raised and you get a threshold. And you know that if you go above that threshold, it's death, right?
Oof.
So what you have to do, now this is where it gets really interesting. So what the intention, right, would then be, okay, I'm going to try to raise my happiness threshold, right? But there's a thing that we do called upper limiting. So the second you get to the threshold, you'll do something. And he will go so far, and this sometimes makes people mad, but this is something that I subscribe my life to, and I'm not saying anybody else has to, but like, let's say you're right there and you get a cold. You know, even something as simple as that, I can choose to take responsibility and go, oh, look, I'm upper limiting myself. Or sometimes how we sabotage something right when we're, and it's called upper limiting, right? So the idea is, how do you, when you go to pass your happiness threshold and you upper limit yourself, how do you keep yourself at least a little higher than you were before, instead of going, boom, see, I fucked it up. Or instead of destroying it completely, like a lot of people do, you know, a lot of people at the height of their success, at the height of their things, will do things because it's this belief that we can't go higher than that we can't, that it's not just, it really, but it's all the way back to like, what if there's no good or bad? What if it is just a big cycle? What if they just don't know the punchline? And I don't mean to get all airy fairy, but this is how I get myself through the fucking day. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know, and I do feel like Western thought or whatever, and I'm completely Western, so I feel like that sort of like haranguing of oneself and sort of lack of like this idea that we're not inherently delicious just because we exist, even in our worst, most terrible, wasteful, mean to the planet and to other people ways, that we're like these big dumb babies, and that like, oh, look at you, dumb baby. Like, you know, like, it'll all be, 'cause the earth will eat us eventually if you do it all wrong. So like, but even that, like that idea of like, at the end of the day, like, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? 'Cause you know, there are such a thing, and they will show up in your life. You know, I feel like people will show up and you'll be like, oh, look, they're giving themselves more grace and they're being really lovely and they're not a jerk. Like, you know what I mean? They're a big-hearted, and their life just gets bigger and grander and they seem relaxed and I feel safe around them. And there are people like that, you know, I'm thinking of Joe Mantegna, who is like literally the nicest person.
Oh, that's so nice to
and
hear.
He has like this sort of like beautiful way of sort of like, he's so open, but yet you can tell that he's like got really good boundaries. And he can get, you know, he can, if someone does something that is wrong to the family, he's pissed at them. But he's not pissed at them. He's pissed at like that thing. And then it's like in the best way that makes you go like, yeah, that's happening.
Yeah.
And like you, but there are people like that. There are people and your mind will start. I mean, I tell myself this, like, will train itself to find that, you know, and to find places that are like, oh, you feel like I feel like we're having this right now. Like,
yes.
Well, you feel like I feel, and I feel like you're like this. So we're here together. So maybe it's going to be okay. Maybe we can go find people and we can go find things. And you're like, look, everything's okay. I don't know if anyone else understands what I'm saying, but I understand what I'm saying.
I don't think anybody who listens to this podcast, if you're still listening after 200 plus episodes and you don't feel that way, I'm not sure why you're here. But maybe, I mean, like, I can't imagine what your motivation would be at this point.
But that book is fantastic. And it makes me think about what you're saying.
It chilled me to the bone when you said that. Yeah. I was like, yep.
Yeah.
All right, listen, this is the most, and I am not, I'm using hyperbole, but it's because I sincerely feel this way. It's never been harder for me to move past what we're talking about and get into this MASH game. This is, I'm experiencing like a physical ache of like, I can't do this for 3 more hours. I never really want it to be over, but this is like, this is the hardest it's ever been. I'm not kidding. Like, it's real hard.
You're making like, me blush.
Okay, and I'm going to go like get on a call soon and be a grown up and talk about budgets. This doesn't feel okay. This was my oasis. This is a beautiful, beautiful window. I'm going to cherish it and I'm not going to be sad that it's ending.
There's always more abundance economy.
There's abundance and absolutely. Okay. All right. So for the first MASH question, let's just jump right into the world of fantasy.
Okay.
Three movies that you can step into, live, experience, be in, be with the characters, get it all over you. You're not reenacting the plot. You're not a character in the movie, but you get to be in that world.
Rushmore.
Great. Well, that feels extremely appropriate given what we've talked about.
Oh gosh. Jump in it. Which one am I going to pick? Impromptu. I'm picking Impromptu.
Mm. Yeah. No one knows that movie.
I love that movie and I want to roll around.
I've seen that movie so many times.
Yeah, I love it so much. Oh.
I've never even had another person bring it up. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm the only person. Even if someone else has seen it, they won't bring it up. I will always be the person who's like, well, you know, like Impromptu. Someone will be like, I vaguely remember that.
No.
Like, was like, who was in that? Was
Hugh Grant,
it like,
Manny
you know,
Julian
yeah,
Sands.
You're like everyone.
Everyone that
Emma Thompson.
Yes.
Yeah. I am right there with you. Oh, my God. I would get in there so fast.
Yeah.
And you're just surrounded by a bunch of super vulnerable geniuses.
God, right? And you're just having a week. You're just doing what I want everyone to, you know, you just go away and you just have your internal angst and you have some sex. And
that is a great example too of like of that love affair of, oh, they were both like preposterous people on some level or you know what I mean? Like they're just how messy that those, I mean, all of the characters
all
were
the
very
characters.
Messy, but, and also the idea of like getting over being with someone and still being in the same community.
Yes,
and
sort I love
of like
that.
Still,
and I really, that touched me. I really felt that. I felt that a lot.
Yeah.
And I love that. Like any kind of movie that like we're away in the country.
Yeah.
We're away in the country and we're just having a time.
And yes. And how feminist it was. And like that, of course, for both you and me, that fascination with gender, that fascination of that role. And that, like, I remember like how deeply it resonated when she was like, when he said, I just don't have, when he says, I don't have any strength, that she's like, I have too much of it. Take mine. And you're like, oh, it's okay to feel that way too. Like you don't have to be rescued by a knight in shining armor.
Yeah.
You can be the person that's like, hey, I have a surplus of this
thing. Exactly.
It doesn't matter if I'm male or female.
Exactly. It made me go out and delve into that thing because you're like, that happened then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it
yes.
opens up this whole world where
yes.
you read things that are really old and you go, You felt like me? Yeah. Like that's always
profound.
Very soothing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. My God. Great. Absolutely. Good luck with your third one, since I just went off for 10 minutes on impromptu.
No, I'm just going totally obvious. And I'm Harry Potter.
Great.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. I was going to say Coraline, but I want there to be a happy part of Coraline
I go into. I know. That one hurts my feelings. Like, I love it. It hurts my feelings.
It's a gift to me because I actually did. This is a short story. I will make it short. I was doing a movie and it didn't get done. I was asked by Faye Dunaway to do Masterclass. This was only like 6 years ago, and I was supposed to play an 18-year-old girl from Cuba.
Love what I'm hearing.
It didn't come out. Maybe it will sometime in a different way. But it was, how do I explain this? Exactly what you would expect a movie experience with this iconic person you've heard about to be. And I was sort of trapped in this hotel room, and it was in Detroit, and I was flying back and forth to work to Detroit. And it was hard because I was working with a lot of people that weren't getting paid yet or their per diem, and they had sort of dropped everything to do this, and it was hurting me to kind of just be there. And also I couldn't really go out because I was very famous and I didn't have any friends really. And again, I'm like kind of weirdly shy. And I was like, no one wants to hang out. So I was kind of, I was trapping myself in my hotel room, and it was Halloween. So this is probably like 5 years ago or whatever
It's a Halloween story.
Yeah, it's Halloween story. So I'm sitting in, and I'd never read Coraline. And I am now since then very dear friends with Neil Gaiman by a weird turn of events. Yeah.
I'll exploit that after you and I have been friends for longer, because I don't like exploiting
delicious,
people.
And I appreciate your transparency about that. Don't worry. That's good.
Well, I only want someone to meet me on the same terms.
Exactly. No,
I don't want to meet him as like, hey, I'm just this person. Like, I want it to be like, oh, you guys are going to do a sketch fest or whatever.
Exactly.
Or
that was just adorable. Yeah. I love that. I'm stealing it is what I'm saying.
Take it.
But like by weird turn of events, we're now... he's like a,
also that doesn't surprise me
he's
in
like
the least
family.
It doesn't surprise me in
he's
the least
like the most,
on any level of what I know about either of
and
you
and I don't feel like I am remotely worthy of him. He'll say like, you should write this thing. I'm like, oh, just, you know how you just write a thing. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting in this room watching this movie about this, you know, this girl that goes, and there's this woman, and she's making these demands, and this girl is trying to do what the giant lady is, and they're in Pontiac, Michigan, and I was in Pontiac, Michigan while that was happening, and I didn't know that's where it took place.
Yeah.
So I felt like I was in that movie. At that moment, at that time, and this stranger that I didn't know had given me this gift. He didn't know he gave me this gift until actually like a week ago. I actually told him this because when I first met him, I wanted to play cool and whatever. Hey, you're a guy. I'm a person.
Yep.
And
that's
just
my MO.
Him. Yeah, exactly. So
and then 2 years later, all right, listen, this is weird, but like I talked about it on a podcast, so now I have to tell you that you changed my life,
exactly.
But like now I know what your snot looks like, so it's kind of weird
so
I emulated you. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So anyway, so I would say Coraline if it was a nice version by Harry Potter. I'm sorry.
I agree.
I digressed.
No, that was it. That was a very worthwhile story. Side note, yesterday I was just rereading I make no secret about the fact that I'm obsessed with Ray Bradbury. I have been since I was a child. He's my favorite author. And one of my favorite listeners, Holly, who I had the pleasure of hanging out with a little bit on the Joko cruise, sent me not long ago that I had never read Neil Gaiman's sort of tribute piece that he wrote about Ray Bradbury. I was reading it yesterday. So I love that. That means
That's
everything
crazy.
Is happening as it should.
That's the man who saved what is the name of the story?
Oh, the one that Neil Gaiman wrote? I probably still have it on my computer.
Yeah, but I know that one.
Yeah. So anyway,
that's
so wonderful because it weaves together his own experiences with like references to all of these different things that Robert Bradbury wrote, and the idea of like, I also have this like nonstop fascination with time, which isn't to say like I'm obsessed with time travel movies, although I kind of am.
I am too. My show.
But this idea that everything's happening at the same time all the time.
My show messes about that. My show messes about, it's about this TED talk I heard about visible quantum objects and about how, what if everything in your life happens at the
same
time?
It's just happening.
And I'm doing it at the San Francisco. I'm doing it at the
Sketch
Fest.
Oh my God. I know you are. I'm losing my mind right now. Yeah.
This is really true.
Yeah.
That's really crazy.
This is all because this whole conversation almost feels like I'm remembering it as it's happening.
Weirdly,
like, remember how we've already talked about this?
I feel weirdly casual for someone that I haven't talked to.
I know. Well, remember, you're remembering something that hasn't happened yet. Okay. That's like, anyway. That's what, okay.
Yeah, anyway.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. That's crazy. Oh, boy. Okay. All right.
You have to watch that visible quantum object and I'll send it.
Okay, well. Okay. All right. Next one, since we talked about Neil Gaiman,
you were on a side note. You said how you're obsessed with things, time happening at the same time.
Oh, well, he mentions that. He just casually drops in really early on in the piece, like, how is it possible to remember something that hasn't happened yet? And, how I feel about everything.
Got it.
Amazing. Okay. So since we talked about Neil Gaiman, we talked about this idea of, you know, forging friendships with people, like genuine great friendships with people that you also look up to. This is could be a character, could be someone who is not alive anymore, could be someone who is alive. Three people that you're like, oh, in this MASH universe, you didn't know that I'm also dear friends with blank? Three.
Oh God. Oh God. Oh my God. Oh God. I'm feeling pressure because I'm like, you have a budget call and I want to give you a good answer quickly. Okay. So I'm friends with them. Like I would just, we're hang out, we're pals, yeah. Whatever.
It's that person that 2 years later you're like, by the way, I did worship you.
Yeah. Okay.
But again, could be a character. Could be like someone who's not real.
Kate Bush.
Great.
I can feel the person. I can see what they're like, mm-hmm. And I'm okay. Just trying to.
And it's also very on the spot. I get it.
And be with you, and come here to me. Okay, because we were talking about books.
Yeah.
So now I want to. I can't remember her name, but I want to. Who do I want to like? I want to eat them. I want to get inside of them.
Yep.
And I want to just be them when I grow up and hang out and make food and giggle.
Yeah.
Well, to be honest, I was really excited to do this podcast because I listened to this podcast a lot.
Stop it right now. Would you just. Come on now.
I don't want to. It's really true, though. Is that weird?
Well, listen, this is almost a wasted wish because believe me, the feeling is mutual. I put myself down. My initials down right underneath. Oh, and then there's Bush,
this girl, Stevie, that I know from Canada. She went on Twitter and actually she had said, like, Kirsten should be on the Janet Varney show. And I remember being like it? Is it too much? Am I seeming too pushy? I like that very fast. If the little heart had different like variations of like how hard you pushed it, it would have been like, whoa, it's a hard push. I am going to say, I want to get I got a musician. Am I going all ladies?
No need to.
I don't need to do that. Party friends with Neil Gaiman. I would say Neil Gaiman.
I know. That's great.
Because I do that to myself sometimes. Like, yep, he's my friend.
Yeah.
She is.
Yeah.
I want someone that I want to just, like, can I just sit and Steve Martin.
Great.
Which I know he's going to be modeling and stuff. I was listening to your thing. And I had a friend who dated him, too. But
I think he's past that now.
I think he's past that.
You know what I mean?
I would just be like,
that was
Steve,
the point
I'm
going to
make
life.
You some yerba mate. You're going to play the banjo.
When I think about it, I'm like, look, just because he's a genius doesn't mean that he doesn't go through, he's not capable of going through parts of emotional and physiological development that human beings tend to go through. When I think about his age, I'm like, oh, well, that is right about the right time for him to be wanting to date someone my age.
That's true.
I think he's past that. He's married to someone. You know what I mean?
True. Like, he is married. And I feel like if we were friends, then I could just like play his albums and then just say them to him.
That's right.
And that would make me really happy.
That's right.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay. Let's do time travel. Let's do things that would be interesting to visit, whether it's painful but important or magical and strange and wonderful, just to get in your safety bubble to get a view of the future or past.
Three. Oh, so I'm just looking at like environment and like
you just get to
whatever.
Witness it, okay. And kind of see what it really was like.
Okay, so I want to go to definitely. I'm in the middle of writing this play, and I'm really fascinated with like I want to be in like Byzantine time with like Justin and Theodora,
mm-hmm.
The Empress. I want to be like there.
Great.
I want to be. I want to be in Renaissance-y But like when things are getting good,
you
know, almost like liberal Renaissance time. And I want to be, I'm trying to think of like what kind of clothes I want to wear. I'm going to say,
big part of it.
I'm going to say I want to be in the '80s.
Great.
I want to be in the '80s.
Barb.
Yeah, Barb.
There was a lot of that. There's a lot of that sort of like being at the, like now being at the age where I can look at some cute little hipster girl who's like 15 wearing like crazy glasses and like a ruffly shirt and go, okay.
Yeah.
Like you don't even know how much pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, my favorite babysitter went through for looking exactly like you look right now, and you're getting all kinds of sex. Yeah, okay. Exactly, all right. Well, that's, it could be bad, could be good. I'm going to make it great. Exactly. It's great. It's great, 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 great.
Exactly. You know? But if I went back in time, like now I feel like I know how to feather my hair.
Yeah.
You know, and I could do that and just see what it's like in a different way. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Next one. Let's do vacation home. Let's do real life, places that you could potentially have one, but traveling to get there is not an issue.
Okay. Traveling to get there, not an issue. I would say I want a place. Oh, I'm such a homebody.
All my places are like, where could I just not leave?
Yeah,
but exactly. Also know that it was right outside my door.
Exactly.
Like I've definitely gone on vacation in Paris where I'm like, I love being in this hotel room in Paris, like right outside my door. Paris.
I know.
All day and all night.
Like, I went out and had some cappuccino and stuff. I did it. I do that. I'm going to say Ireland, because I've never been there and I want to go real bad.
Ditto.
And I feel like it's going to be good.
Yeah. I feel that way about Scotland also.
Yeah. I'm going to say, like a verdant foresty kind of place. No issue to get there, right?
Yep.
Because I want to be like in like Big Sur, but like not have to do that weird windy drive.
Yep.
And then, I'm going with places I've actually never been because I love Italy and I love Paris.
Also it gets to be whatever you want it to be.
I'm going
to
say Norway.
Yeah. Which by the way, I have been. Good choice.
Yeah. I'm going to say Norway with a good view of a fjord.
Love it. I got to do like the fjord stuff. I was only in Oslo for like 2 days.
Yeah.
As part of that sort of when you're on the whirlwind, like I guess I'm going to all the Scandinavian countries
exactly.
Real quick.
And now I got to go because I have this distillery. I got to go and try their aquavit thing.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay. Next one is let's do, have you ever heard a category that you, that spoke to you that you're like, oh, I would know just what to say.
I always get terrified. Every time I listen to it, I go like, oh, what would I say?
Yeah. As if the pressure's on you in that
it
moment.
It really does. I think that's part of the joy.
Okay. Let's do, I got really distracted by drawing earrings on this little smiling braces girl. Okay. Let's do the sort of music, like the composer. I'm kind of in this jag now, but it's because I would love to answer it myself, although I would not know what to say, which is that sort of like, because I think you have a rich emotional life. It's that sort of like what your drive to and from places looks like, that you have this sort of like new soundtrack that like a Kate Bush is sort of, it's like music no one's ever heard before. That's actually for you. It's sort of your life's soundtrack.
Right.
Three.
I'm giving you composers.
Yeah. And not composers. Like, yeah, just any musician, a band, a singer, songwriter, actual composer.
Okay.
Like if Nick Drake, you know what I'm saying? Like the happy, sad, I just kind of always want that. Like I rarely want really, really upbeat music, and I rarely want like really like depressive Elliott Smith type music.
Yes.
I usually want something
that
right in the middle that's
the middle.
Like, isn't life beautiful and so sad and so wonderful, and aren't we lucky, and isn't it hard?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that's my
example.
I hear
you. Tori Amos.
Great.
What? And there's a thing, and see, I'm going to go. These are the things that I'm basically like, what does Kirsten listen to when she drives in her car?
Well, there you go.
Patty Griffin.
Great.
Patty. And God, I feel like I should change it up. Okay, I'm talking early first. If we're talking about my soundtrack, what we're talking about here, we're talking about like first three albums and mostly like B-sides, obscure Duran Duran.
Oh, great. You did shake it up. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me really want to go back to the earlies and the B-sides.
Mm-hmm. They're a good time.
I gotta revisit it. Okay. Next one is sexy or romantic or just like long time companion, three people that you know, have your sort of alternate universe love affair with. Or just like a one night stand because you want to get it done.
No, anybody that I'm going to want to keep them. Kate Winslet.
Great. Oh, God. No kidding.
What
a dreamboat.
Helen Mirren. I want her now, and I want her Excalibur, and her Caligula.
Yeah.
That's why I'm picking her. Is I want right. And what's creepy is I'm friends with her nephew, so that maybe because it might be too close to home. But I love her so. She's just so yummy.
Yeah.
And I want. Okay, what I'm thinking about, I don't have a specific name for it, but I basically want the dude in every Judy Blum book that like the guy from Tiger Eyes, or like I want that guy that like in my mind is that they're sort of androgynous looking, they're mm-hmm. a really good kisser,
mm-hmm.
and they're from all of those Judy mm-hmm. Blum books. Well,
that's wonderful.
I want that dude from the Judy Blum book.
She really
knew
it.
How to stir the juices up.
She did. Yeah, I think I don't remember having any kind of penis envy at all until I read Then Again, Maybe I Won't. And then I was like, Nocturnal Emissions.
That's right.
Sounds pretty good to me.
That's right. I remember that.
Like crazy, hot, that. Sexy dreams that like force you to have an orgasm and you don't have to do anything to make it happen.
Well, I would have those. I would have those night things where you wake up and go, oh
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
I would have those. So I kind of think I felt like.
I feel like I would always have those, but I would wake up right before orgasm and be like.
Oh, they're very frustrating.
What?
As girls, they're very frustrating because it's not like you sleep. I mean, very few people sleep with your hand between your legs.
So that's right.
You're basically having like a weird shadow orgasm. So you can't really make it totally.
That's a perfect way of describing
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Okay. All right. Next one will be let's do three alternate businesses. Like you sort of have, because I know you have made a wonderful dream come true in this life where mm-hmm. you have this alternate wonderful thing you've been able to get involved in, and also theater. But let's throw three more out there into the universe.
And they can't be things that I do right now at all. Or like dabble in a little bit.
You could dabble. Okay. Absolutely.
I would be.
This just grows it out more fully.
I would either be like the guy who picks the music for the movie or the TV show.
Oh
like
yeah.
I'm really good at that.
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah.
A,
yeah.
Like a, you know, like a TV DJ, but not really.
Yeah.
Like, I call that make music supervisor experiences. Kind of like?
Yes. Yeah.
I would do that. I would run a little, like I would do it in like Georgia or North Carolina. And I would have like a little, like, you know, those little shops, and you come in and you get your preserves
mm-hmm.
and some bread and mm-hmm.
Like your little general store almost.
Yeah, general store. Yeah. And I have like chickens and cows that I just milk
mm-hmm.
like that.
Yeah.
I would have like a little.
Yep.
Yeah, like a little general store.
And I love it.
My other job would be, I would be a teacher. I would be a school teacher, which I did for years. And I actually... like loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. Both my parents were teachers also.
Oh,
and
yeah?
I have a lot of residual.
Yeah.
Not, I don't want to say guilt, but some of it is guilt, which is like, oh, they made such a difference. Like, I hope I have anything close to that impact on anyone ever. You know what I mean?
I still get to do it every once in a while, like read Across America and stuff like that.
I know you're great.
Yeah. And it's sometimes
what a great teacher.
Cause I used to be a sub for such a long time.
Yeah.
A lot of people I know still are. So it's weird. Cause I've actually visited friends and they're like, I'm just going to run to the bathroom. Cause they're so used to me.
Oh
like,
yeah.
Cause I can do it.
Yeah. You'll helm
and
it.
I kind of miss it a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes. So many paper clips.
When I said helmet, that made me think of ships, which made me think of the idea of like waking up tomorrow with a sort of that Matrix style three skills, like three things. Because in my mind, I was like, God, I would love if I was just like, oh, sailing, sure. I'll never, I mean, I'll never say never, but like, that's not, even something, it's like I want to because I know I could go take sailing lessons. But there's part of me that's like, well, I don't even know if I really want to, but like in this world, if I could just quickly suddenly love sailing and be a great sailor, that'd be really cool. Anyway, so three things.
I would say surfing.
Great.
I'm going to say scuba diving.
Great. A lot of water stuff.
Oh, yeah. I'm a Cancer.
That makes a lot of sense to me. And I don't even know how I feel about astrology, and that still makes sense to me.
I don't know how I feel about
it. I'm so that person. It's like, these guys know that I'm like, astrology, adorable guys. It's just another way for us to try to understand ourselves. Side note, I'm a total Aquarius.
Yeah, exactly.
Then I'm like spoken like a true Aquarius with a Virgo moon and a Leo rising.
I'm the same way. I get you. But still, I'm like it.
Oh, magic.
So I get to say it.
Oh, magic.
We believe it enough. It's true. And I am going to say, oh my God, I just want to be able to do this so bad. Sewing. Someday I will be able to. So bad.
You and that hat. Ugh. I think that's really what broke open the floodgates when you started talking about that hat. God damn you. Okay. Tell me when to.
Okay.
Tell me.
Just gave me like a hilarious, adorable stare of like, don't look at me while I conjure the magic. Okay.
Tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. I'm going to pause this. I don't know about you, but I'm going to pee while I do this. I can do both at the same time. And then I'll come back and give you 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Okay.
Okay.
At the time, I was like, oh my God, we pulled time.
I mean, it's just beyond worth it. Okay. Also, when I was doing this, I was doing it so extra carefully. Like, I really hope I would hover over something and be like, I hope she didn't want that one, but I can't. I mean, I just got to go with what the ring said.
Yeah.
Okay. The first thing that it just never ceases to charm me that it's mansion, apartment, shack, and house, because inevitably it's like so rare to get something that sort of makes sense. Mm-hmm. But, and also just the grandness of like picking an entire country and then ending up with an apartment just seems just very funny. But you do have a beautiful apartment in Ireland.
Oh, I'm excited.
An Irish apartment. A beautiful Irish apartment.
It's going to be like a Virden.
It's just so, it's so metro.
I know.
That like, you know, you could sort of justify, like you're like a house, like, oh, no, a shack, like, oh, a ramshackle cabin.
Yeah, but an apartment.
Or a mansion. Yeah. The apartment immediately places it in such a specific context.
I'm still imagining it as a little mushroom.
That's great. It's great. As you should. Okay. So you have a beautiful apartment in Ireland. You are an expert surfer.
Wow.
So well done on that one. I don't know if there's a lot of surfing off the coast of Ireland.
I can travel.
Certainly
it's
you
my
can here.
Home,
Listen,
so,
also, yeah. You live very near great surfing with your other home. You can also... I want to say you can surf a broomstick when you go into the world of Harry Potter.
Oh, I get to.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I would be very excited to be in that world.
Okay.
You know what? And I'll take all the danger. It's fine. I want the thrills.
Oh, yeah, because I'll learn stuff.
I'll take all the danger. Yeah. That actually makes me very pleased because you did end up with me.
We're going to be so happy.
I was very embarrassed. I was like, I just crossed off Kate Bush and Steve Martin and had to circle myself.
That's the best.
Wah, wah.
I'm excited. I'm excited about
that. Good. Okay, good.
Yeah.
You have this sort of soundtrack that, you know, can exist when you're surfing and just sort of being out in that world. Uh-huh. It can exist certainly when you're in the Harry Potter world. And in today's world or in Ireland, your own personal Tori Amos soundtrack.
Really? I'm so...
Just an endless supply of new music of hers that's perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect for me. And you know what you're talking about because as a music supervisor, you are a genius at putting the right music and mood to the right scene. So that's fantastic. I'm very envious of that. I think it's wonderful. Uh-huh. And you also have the ability to travel back in time all the way back to the Byzantine Empire,
where you're seeing
Justin of Theodora, which by the way, Justin is such a contemporary name.
I know, right?
You're like, oh, that came Justin. From something that wasn't 1982. Exactly.
Yes, Brock, his brother Brock and Tad.
And last but not least, and I love this because it's so nebulous. You have ended up with this sort of composite Judy Blume dreamy, androgynous person that could kind of be
ever I want
every person that
YA
you want.
Book that
that's right.
I thought about. I'm
that's really, very. I think that's kind of a spectacular result, and it's a great. It was a great answer because it's so open ended.
Yeah,
it's great. It's great.
I want it all.
It's great. What a pleasure.
Oh my God.
What a pleasure.
Mine too.
I'm not thank letting you so leave much. Before we make like official plans. You know. thank you. What My what pleasure. Would you like people to know about? You have a ton of followers. I'm sure everyone knows about stuff, but if for some reason there's something that you want to get people excited about, what Diani and Divine the Apocalypse Diani is the Divine, movie that we were in together, but not together.
Yes, but you should see that. I self-produced a movie that I spent all of the money, a lot of money. And the reason what's so cool about it is that it was shot in Los Angeles. Everybody that wasn't already union was Taft-Hartley. That includes union
That's
writers,
great.
Directors.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's great. Paul F. Tompkins is in it. Joe Mantegna's in it.
Love it.
Everybody made a, it's really hard to kind of do that, to shoot something in Los Angeles. It's a period piece, takes place in the 40s. And everybody made a living wage, and it was, I'm really, really, really proud of it. And it's on iTunes, and it's called Kill Me Deadly.
Oh, great. And, great. Great, great, great.
It's super strange and fun. And it's like if Airplane and the Maltese Falcon and Rocky Horror Picture Show maybe had a baby.
I'm in.
And let's see, I'm going to be at the San Francisco Sketch Fest sometime in January. And I wish I
That's
knew that.
That's sort of a secret in that we haven't announced anything yet.
Oh, I didn't. That's not happening.
But I'm definitely not editing this out. So
oh,
my partner's David Cole
can
deal with it.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm not editing.
And I'm also going to do that. I'm going to make myself do it sometime before then. That is my intention to do it here in the Los Angeles.
Okay, great.
But I don't have any new information
but keep,
about that yet.
But obviously you guys can keep updated about that if you're on the social medias.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you go to blinkingowldistillery.com, that's Blinking the distillery Owl, right. that I am a part of with two of my super great friends.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. This is
fantastic.
So much fun.
Thank you so much. What a joy. Okay, guys, what can I say? I'll talk to you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.